Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then, I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright, okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't fit my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Hello, Degrassi alumni, and welcome back to another episode of D-Grads, the Degrassi Rewatch Podcast. And I am, of course, Shane Kipple, a.k.a. Spinner. And over there...
it's me, Mike LaBelle, or as my mom still calls me, Jay Hogarth.
I really need to have a talk with her about that. Yes, we are your hosts.
Please.
We are your hosts, and every week we go through another episode of Degrassi. Last week was Mother... wow, I'm messing that up. Mike, you take over. This is supposed to be you anyway.
Last week we watched Mother and Child Reunion Part 1, and this week we're going to do Part 2, the follow-up to that. But I just want to say we're joined... it's not just the two of us, Shane. We're also joined by our wonderfully handsome producer, Andy, at the controls. And today we have a very, very special guest, the baby that started the next generation herself.
The baby. Yes, it is true. Even though Andy is always a special guest, we have an even more special guest. And she is the glue that holds the old Degrassi and the new Degrassi together. Without her, there would not have been a next generation. She is, like I said last week, the filling in the Oreo that is Degrassi. The beautiful, the talented Miriam McDonald, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys so much. I am so happy to see you both. It is a joy to be here. And my goodness, I have never had an intro quite like that. So thank you for that.
Hey, thanks so much.
You deserved it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Miriam. This is like, it's so integral. Your character is obviously the hinge between the previous generation and this generation. And getting to see you just performing as a kid in these episodes, we were remarking last episode just like how delightful and honest and raw your performance was. And being able to see it now as an adult looking back, it was super charming and really authentic, and it's great.
Thank you so much for saying that. I did rewatch a little bit of both the first and the second episode, and I can totally agree with you. Having not seen it in so many years, I was taken by the fact of how young I looked. I couldn't believe watching back. I was like, oh, I was a baby. I had no idea at the time. I was like, no, I'm this professional. I am mature. And I look back and I'm like, I was so young. But thank you. I also saw that vulnerability and a little bit of fear because I really didn't know what I was doing when I was going into those first episodes. But yeah, it was nostalgic to say the least.
Yeah, we were saying last week that, like, from that very first scene, did you happen to watch episode 101 as well?
Yes.
Like, right from, okay. Yes. Great. That's great. So I said, like, from the moment you and Cassie appear on screen for the first time, I'm like, I understand immediately why you two were cast in those roles. Like, immediately. You're like, it's your kids, obviously, none of us knew what the hell we were doing, but like your energy and the innocence, but the excitement. And it, we really felt that you and Cassie had been friends for a long time. And it was
the chemistry,
because it has been so long since I've seen the show, just like you, just like Mike. We are so excited to rewatch it because I think we're actually going to become fans of Degrassi. As we do this,
right?
That's amazing. Wow. Well, you know, you just touched on something that I hadn't really given much thought to, which was me and Cassie's friendship. Obviously, through the years, it became a very real and authentic off-screen chemistry and friendship. But in that first episode, we'd only known each other a matter of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So it is pretty magical that they were able to pick these two girls from different worlds and that we did have that immediate sisterhood. So that's really interesting. And I don't know if you guys remember back to those rehearsal days, which is kind of unheard of on a lot of shows, but we would do the authentic rehearsals where we'd, like, you know, plot everything out. So I think that did a lot for the camaraderie between us, because we could joke around in ways we couldn't when we were actually filming. And I think that helped to build the friendships.
Bruce McDonald directed it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So he would have been there. Wow. I can't. It just blows my mind to even think. I didn't realize Bruce directed the first episode.
Yeah.
He directed lots of episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was so impactful on my whole concept of the show and of acting in general, because, I mean, obviously, like, your first of anything has this profound effect on how you perceive things as a whole. And Bruce, like, anybody that knows him knows he's a little eccentric. Like, he is such a unique person, which is why he's able to get these great creative projects. He was the best possible director we could have had for that episode. I just remember his cowboy hat, for starters, that he would always wear.
Always his cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Every single time.
And
yes.
just had this way of making me feel like I knew what I was doing when I really had no idea. He just made me feel so at ease, and he's just so talented. So that was, like, what a lucky break we had to have him on that first episode.
Of course, yeah.
Well, it looked like you guys really knew what you were doing. And like we said, the chemistry was leaping off of the screen. And I can... when I saw those first two episodes and just the way you guys were, I knew, I was like, yeah, well, this is a hit show. I get it. I want to spend time with these people. So
yeah.
Let's just recap Mother and Child Reunion Part 1, just to catch everybody up on where we're at. In the first episode, we meet Manny, we meet JT, Toby, and Emma, of course, who is crushing on this guy, Jordan, who she's met remotely through an environmentalist website. And it's a budding internet romance, but not everybody on the cast is convinced of what it, of, you know, that it is what it seems.
Yeah.
Including Toby and JT.
And Manny.
And Manny has she's got a little hint of doubt in her eye.
She was excited at the beginning, but then she started to get a little apprehensive. And especially when she had a feeling that Emma was not telling her everything.
Yeah. Anymore. And it's really subtle, but it totally reads. So meanwhile, the adults, you know, Degrassi's previous generation, Lucy and Joey and Caitlin, Spike and Snake, all of the alumni are preparing for this big 10-year high school reunion. But there's this tension between Joey and the group specifically. And then at the end of this episode, Caitlin gives Emma a pep talk about following her heart. It's saying that it's usually right. And Emma takes that and she runs with it. And we're out on her running up to her computer and replying to Jordan via email to agree to meet tomorrow. So that kind of catches us up to episode 102, the follow-up, which opens up where Emma is seeing Spike off to the high school reunion. Emma's wearing little trivia there. Emma's actually wearing this Joey Jeremiah hat at this point. I don't know if you caught that. It's making the rounds.
Emma was wearing the fedora. I missed that. I was too busy taking notes.
Yeah, it's like the first entire episode, this hat is being sort of tossed around and ending up on all of these different characters.
I feel like that was a Bruce thing too. I feel like that's one of his little like quirky things that he was like, oh yeah, let's have the hat. Like everybody, someone different's wearing the hat at all times. So
yes.
He's got his little like secret
Bruce-isms, if you will.
Yeah, Bruce-isms. Yes.
Totally. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, it was, it's cute, it's clever, and like it's a nice little Easter egg for all of the people who, like, it's making its rounds with the younger cast, even though in the first episode, Snake took it off of JT's head. But it's kind of like, it's showing with symbolism, like, as a metaphor, like, the show being passed on, like, through Joey's hat.
I totally agree. And I didn't even clue into this one until I watched it today, after having not seen this episode in years.
Yeah.
But I noticed, I was like, my hair in that first episode, I've got these like spikes on the side of my head. And then I thought to myself, spikes.
Oh my goodness.
Is this a not a spike that I never picked up on? Because obviously she was, you know, her hair was like such a part of her character.
Yeah.
Was this unbeknownst to me, like some little nod to that by like, okay, I'm just going to have the eccentric hair on the first episode. I don't know.
Oh, that's amazing.
But I totally agree about the fedora. It's like,
I bet that's what they were thinking, because there are a lot of, they've imbued this entire episode with like a pass the torch moment, the feel and everything. And I think they just do it so well and so ceremoniously. Like they really give everybody and the previous iteration their due.
I'm just thinking as we're mentioning Spike, up to this point, how did you first meet Amanda? Like, how did you guys kind of forge this, you know, history of mother-daughter? Do you remember that? Was that difficult? Like, did you spend some time with her before you act like the rehearsal? Or, I'm wondering about that.
I was trying to remember back to the screen test auditions. I think that she was there at one of my final auditions, because I guess they were trying to do a little bit of a compatibility match. Because if her and I had no rapport, then it just wouldn't have worked. So I think I met her at the auditions for the first time. And then, honestly, it was similar to Cassie. It was just this very natural and organic thing. Like there was an immediate comfort with her. Like she is just the sweetest human being. And she would always make a point to go out of her way to converse, to ask me questions. Like I think she was really making an effort to like create that bond. Cause I was in a lot of ways, even if it didn't necessarily read, I was really scared during those first two episodes, not even about the content, but just like, I felt like I needed to pretend I knew what I was doing when I didn't. I remember thinking Ryan Cooley, oh my gosh, he's so experienced. He started acting at like 7. I didn't start till I was 12. Like, I just remember thinking like, oh, I'm so behind. Am I going to fool them? Are they going to think I know what I'm doing? So I was like, I was just shaking in my boots, honestly, during the filming of both those episodes.
It's amazing, but you don't look like it. But yeah, of course, you know, like you were young and like this was your first thing and a little case of imposter syndrome. And like, it's totally understandable for a kid to feel like they need to, you know, be really good at this.
Right. It's like, this is a professional set. I guess I got to act the part. And then, I mean, of course, it doesn't take too long to figure out the rhythms of being on a set. But I remember even something as simple as my mark. And Bruce was so gentle about this. But they would keep putting my tape on the ground. And no one outright said, you're going to walk up to this little tee of tape. And so I was just la-di-da doing my scene. And eventually they'd throw in the sandbag. And then Bruce very calmly like pulled me aside. And he's like, yeah, you know what? Sandbag's actually where we need you to be so the camera can see you. But he said it in a way that was just like so kind and so gentle. It was like, it didn't make me feel like I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But like, I was so green. I was so new to it all.
Amazing.
I think Miriam, like, I don't know if you remember, but when we came back for season 2, we're like jumping ahead here, but just for a story, we had that, like a psychologist come in to talk to us on our orientation day about like what, how to handle fame and interview training and all that.
Yeah.
But they also cut together like some B-roll of a whole bunch of things. I think Gavin and a couple of the directors were like, okay guys, so like, we know most of you are new and a little inexperienced and getting to work with the camera and focus and everything is challenging. So here are a whole bunch of like don'ts for season 1. And I remember the only one I actually remember is Sarah Bearable Tischauer jumping on her mark, like walking into a close up, getting onto her mark, looking down at her mark, and then looking back on the camera at the camera.
I remember that too. I had forgotten all about that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we got to dig that one up. That's so funny.
If we could find that somewhere, it would be great. But back to what you were saying about everyone like being green and imposter syndrome. I think like as much as you didn't want it to come through with your energy, with your acting, which I don't think it did, it also is perfect that it was there because of what the character is going through for that episode too. I mean, like you're starting high school. You're going to meet all these new people. So you're nervous and you're excited and you don't like you feel like you're in uncharted territory in your life, which you were on camera. And then like, well, on camera in two different ways, I should say. And then like the excitement of this new love, also being nervous about that.
Yeah.
I think it kind of all made its way into there and made your performance that much more realistic and layered. Personally, that's how I see it.
I totally agree with you. And when I think about their casting, obviously, I think that's a big thing they were looking for. It's like they weren't looking for the kids with the longest resumes. They were looking for the kids with the authenticity and something a little different to bring to the table. So I totally agree with you. And even I think about, and I'm jumping ahead now, so feel free to stop me, but
that's all right.
Final scenes where Emma's in the hotel room with Jordan and he is, you know, he sniffs her hair and he is showing his creepy, creepy side.
It's so creepy.
Even that, like, I just remember like the energy in that room. Like, yes, I was acting nervous, but I was also feeling nervous. Like it was just, there was so much real emotion that was kind of going on in that too. And just that sort of like sense of like freezing up because you're like, this is so out of my depth, but again, it's like it was out of Emma's depth too. So it really translated. Yeah.
We are going there. We are definitely going to unpack all that.
Yeah, for sure.
But just to give us a little, just to get back to sort of where we are in the beginning of the show, the high school reunion begins. All of the alumni of the school arrive and just in time to take a tour of the school, which has been newly improved. As you know, they're showing us all of the different, you know, the computer room and all this stuff now. So we're getting the tour of the school and how it's changed. And that is actually where we see both Ashley and Terry for the first time, and they're leading that tour. So that's the first time we're seeing Christina and Melissa on camera. Meanwhile, Emma lies to Manny about seeing Jordan on this night, okay, saying that she's going to stay home and watch Wildlife Refuge.
Yep.
And obviously, Manny is just, you can see it in her face. She's not buying it, right?
She's not buying it. Not buying it. No.
Like a good friend. And that's another like real kind of friend moment. I'm thinking like, oh, okay, she's sniffing this one out. Like she's getting the spidey sense. She's getting the vibes.
Yeah.
So Caitlin and Joey connect. They make amends. It's a fresh start. But the special moment is interrupted by Allison, who is another grad, and sort of catches Joey's eye. And that moment is taken over, right?
The moment is taken over.
Yeah.
But that's also when you see when Allison takes Joey away, that there's a weird pang of jealousy that Caitlin has in that moment, staring at, like looking at them both walk off. And you're like, all right. All right, there's still something there. There's hope, Mr. Jeremiah, for you yet.
There certainly is, even though it's only been a year since his wife, Julia, passed away, right? So,
well,
it's a little soon.
As they said in the last episode, it's been a year. He has to get over it. So much time to get over the death of the love of your life.
So at this point, so Emma is, she's operating under her own complete will, and she's lied to everybody, including her mom and her best friend, and she is showing up, a 12-year-old, to a hotel, this pretty swanky hotel, to meet Jordan. And of course, she thinks Jordan is a kid.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I meet another kid at a hotel? So Emma's kind of being, She's, you know, she's in a strange new land here and very vulnerable.
Well, that's when we see the other kids, like Manny kind of leading the charge.
That's right.
After she didn't buy Emma's story and like overtly now is like, no, something's up. And then she gets JT and Toby involved and they all formulate a plan. I think it's Toby's plan, actually. Give him his dues here.
Yeah, Toby was integral to this whole thing because he got into the email and he was able to, you know, source out where they were. And he saved the day, 100%. I mean, all of them did, but he was important.
Toby was totally important. And he's so salty in the first part of it. Like in episode one, he's just so salty. And I'm so here for it. I live for Toby's saltiness now. But and he's kind of like the most wise in a weird way, you know, like he feels like he's wise beyond his years. He's got sort of more of the adult perspective, like, whoa, wait, your friend is talking to this guy?
No,
that's not who he says he is. Like, this guy's a total internet predator. So he's on to him right from the beginning. But yeah, I guess Toby's also a little bit of a budding hacker.
Yeah. He's the guy who works the tech van for the spy missions, and he's like, give me totally. 5 more minutes, I'll get those cameras down, just give me 5 more minutes. That's Toby's future.
The quippy, funny, kind of nerdy, yeah, computer hacker.
And to the wise beyond his years, any of us that know Jake Oldsby, Jake was always wise beyond his years. And, you know, also, like, I wouldn't call him salty, but he had a very, very dry sense of humor from a very young age.
Yeah.
And I think we only made it worse.
Yes. Yeah, but his dry sense of humor is what made him so funny, though, because, like, someone else could deliver a line, and then Jake does it, and he just, like, I don't know, he has a great sense of humor. No one else could have done Toby like Jake did.
No.
I know, it's true. There is nobody else. There is no other Toby. He would throw things away so well with it, you know, they would just be... He'd throw it away, but it would just be so funny, impossibly yes. funny. So.
But yeah, like Miriam, like you said, Jake was also like Jake Oldsby, Ryan Cooley, Danny Clark, who we haven't seen yet. But like these were seasoned child actors at that point. And so it made sense. And I was one of the only cast that had no credits before. I did a commercial and then I got Degrassi. So I felt that imposter syndrome. I was looking up to everybody. Any stories at the time, like, I hope I get welcomed into this group one day because I do not belong here. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Those early days, that's just the thing. It was, yeah, Jake and Ryan, they were so experienced in my eyes. And like, I'd done all the acting classes and I really had this very professional approach because my agent at the time, I mean, obviously he very much instilled, this is a job, this is a profession, this is like you need to go and you need to behave. And like, I did all of the right things, but then at the same time I would go to set and I was just a little kid in a very, very big brand new world. There were definitely moments of overwhelm. I remember coming home from set, like after those days of filming, and I would just have these phrases like spinning in my head, like all the things you'd hear on set, like rolling, cut, like all those phrases. And they'd just be like going in my head. Like, I don't know. I mean, it took me a long time to just like process all of it, but I had a long time to do it. I mean, I had over a decade to figure it all out. So
that is true.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's interesting. And hearing you guys talk about feeling like you need to impress, you know, you don't want to screw up and you want to be good at what you're doing. I didn't come way later until season 3, but I had the exact same feeling showing up on, and Degrassi had already been totally established by then, right? So it was like everybody knew it, everybody was watching it, and getting to be on the show, I felt like I was like the new kid just walking in, you know, and I had to kind of find my locker and find my place and find, like, are they gonna like me? You know, I was like,
I hope we were welcoming.
You guys were so welcoming. Honestly, like, there was nobody who really felt like unwelcoming. And you were just so open to me right away. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I always felt like I had a place there, even though I came in season 3, which is like funny because we ended up doing so many more seasons than, you know, after that. But
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Okay, so Emma has arrived at this swanky hotel. Manny has recruited the whole team of hackers, JT and Toby, to get to the bottom of this. Meanwhile, at the high school reunion, Joey overhears Keith, who is Caitlin's fiance, flirting openly with this Allison woman, saying, you know, I'm about to hit it big in LA, kind of, and she's very interested in him, which is, I mean, I gotta say, like, Don McKellar, I really love his cameo in this, but he is swinging for the fences with this terrible guy. Like, he is just the worst.
And why are they sitting on the floor? Why are they sitting on the floor when there's so many benches around?
It's the meet cute. They're like on the floor.
Make it more sleazy, right? It's like...
Totally.
More sleazy. Yeah, yeah. It was sleazy.
Totally. Yeah. Like they could end up just making out at any point right there in front of the lockers.
Yeah. But yeah, no, he... I totally forgot about that. But he, in one fell swoop, says that, like, Caitlin is basically going to be his lackey in this marriage. She's going to have to give up her career and play second fiddle to him. And also, but hey, like, if you're down, I'll just break it off with her and sleep with you right now. Like, it's what a guy, what a stand up individual.
It's a pretty shocking, it's shocking behavior.
Yeah. There's a lot of gross guys in this first episode.
Yeah.
For two at least.
Universe,
the Degrassi universe, is very unkind and unforgiving, and there's a lot of horrible dudes everywhere.
There's a lot of growth. Yeah,
lots of wolves in cheap clothing. That's for sure.
So yeah, so Keith is being an absolute sleaze. I hate him.
Yes.
Meanwhile, at the hotel, Emma meets Mr. Nystrom, who introduces himself as Jordan's teacher. Mm-hmm. And then he invites her up to a hotel room to eat pizza, where he says Jordan and the rest of the boys that he's on this trip with are hanging out. And it, you know, and Jordan has apparently come all the way from Yellowknife, which is like a stretch of a story. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. It's like, why not somewhere a little closer? It just seems totally unbelievable. But Emma buys it, and the pizza probably smells good. And
smells really good. Yeah.
She's still holding out for hope that, you know, the man of her dreams or the boy of her dreams is there. And so she ends up going up to the hotel room with him.
Not to mention that the way that this actor who played Jordan, like, he's clean cut. He doesn't look sleazy in any way. And
totally.
He was very much like, you could tell this is not his first time doing this. He's doing everything to make her feel comfortable, secure, reassuring. All of the, like, the, hey, but if you don't want to come, you don't have to come. You don't have to come. Like, just, you know, the reverse psychology, getting her excited and, like, everything's okay here. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. It was very, very well executed, I thought.
I have another podcast called Let's Not Meet, and it's literally stories like this. It's listeners submit their true horror stories about experiences that they've had with people who are trying to abduct them, kidnappers, stalkers, stuff like that. I can't tell you how many stories, true stories from listeners that I've got that are almost exactly the same plot, like the same techniques that he used, everything down to Emma's, like, not figuring out how to open the door, even though she totally could have opened the door when she's trying to escape. Yeah. Mm. Like, yeah, you clearly could have unlocked it and gotten out of there.
I noticed that too. I was screaming at my character on the screen, just open the door. Like,
yeah,
but here's the thing. And I've noticed this in so many of the stories that I've gotten on the show, especially with kids. When you're in that moment, you're not thinking straight. You just, your mind isn't logical. It's thinking, what's the best place I could go to? The bathroom. I'll lock the door. I'll stay in there. Mm-hmm. That's just how the mind works. And I get a lot of feedback from people saying like, I cannot believe the author would have done this. I can't believe they do that. Like, you don't know that until you're in those shoes, until you're in that situation. Your brain just doesn't work right. Mm-hmm. They got everything right. The writers nailed this. It's a perfect scene.
So it's well-researched.
Yeah.
Yes.
The casting choice, even down to the casting choice of this actor, Jeff Grook? I'm not sure, Grooch. Sorry about
Groot.
That, Jeff.
He is Groot.
He's great. He was great in the role. And but yeah, like he's...
Groot was great.
Groot. We are Groot. Sorry.
We are Grook. We're all Grook. But yeah, no, he was, because he was so unassuming, he looked so friendly, so normal. You know, that's the reality. Right. Mm-hmm, like the wolf in sheep's clothing, they're not, you know, they're not obvious. They blend in. And so they got that part right. I feel like in a lot of ways, this episode really does read as a cautionary, like it is a perfect cautionary tale.
Yeah.
To Andy's point, it's very well researched. It's thought out in that, you know, they're not playing all the characters like cliches, because that's not who kids would actually become, you know, threatened by or enticed by in the real world. And so they're kind of showing kids like, yeah, even if he looks and presents and acts like, you know, a teacher and says he is, like, you still need to be cautious. So
and one more thing to the to what Andy was talking about before, and you, Miriam, like with the fumbling with the door handle, not being able to get it open. I've listened to many podcasts with, you know, people who have served in factions of the military. And they said, like, what no one can understand is what adrenaline will do to you when you're not prepared for it. Your hands feel like they weigh 1,000 pounds. Your fingers feel like they're 10 times as big. And when I was a kid, this is going to be random, but when I was a kid and I watched The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2, there was a moment where the two T-Rexes appear and there's this dude who he's going to get killed, but he's trying to get his tranquilizer gun out of the backseat, and the iron sight is just snagged on a little net and he just can't get it out. And you're like, come on, that would never happen. But what I want to put to all of you is, how many times have you tried to take get one shirt or a dress or something, you know, don't worry about what I do at night, but something out of the closet, and that hanger gets stuck on like three or four other things on the way out. Now imagine doing that when your life is at risk, and how well Murphy's Law will just own your ass in that moment of all the things. So
sorry, Shane, I thought you were going to say, how many times have you been trying to tranquilize a dinosaur? And you just can't get to that trank gun.
After I saw how ineffective that tranquilizer gun would be, and how I know I would not handle my shit if it one T-Rex, let alone two, appear next to my car, and like, I'm just staying off that island, man. There's no part of me that wants to trank a T-Rex.
I agree.
No. Yeah. Anyway, back to Degrassi.
I think if I was in Emma's position, I would have done the same thing. Yeah. I probably would have done the same thing. I would have gone into the bathroom. And this is, you know, the era before cell phones, you know, giving your kids cell phones for safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary times.
But that line, Miriam, where you're in the bathroom, where Emma's in the bathroom and she's, you're Jordan, aren't you? That was heavy.
Yeah, that was so creepy. And like I said, having not watched it back, it was only now that I'm at this age with this maturity, with this perspective, that I can see just how disgustingly perverse and creepy that whole thing was. Like when we were filming it, I was just very much, you know, being the professional and going through the motions. And I knew it was a creepy scene at the time, but like as an adult watching that back, it's like so much more disturbing.
It is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember like even that final scene where Emma escapes and Bruce had created this like backflip where I do like a back somersault over the couch and stuff. It's like my little ninja move to get out of the situation, and clinging to the pizza. Like that was another conscious choice. It's kind of like in a way, it's kind of funny because Emma's going through this thing and she's just still holding on to like
still holding pizza.
I was her pizza. But it's all these moments where you're just like you're frozen and all your mind is doing is running on like, how can I escape? You're almost like, yeah, you're like you're frozen in fear. So, and totally like what you were saying, Shane, it's like same with you're in a rush and you're fumbling with your keys. If you're not in a rush, you're going to get your keys out, no problem. Mm-hmm. But if you got to be somewhere, suddenly your keys are like the hardest thing to find. So I think that's what Emma was experiencing with that little door moment when I was screaming at her, just open the door. But yeah, the adrenaline.
It's an amazing, just to like imagine you watching the episode, Miriam, and screaming at yourself, your childhood self, like, yeah, go.
100%.
But also like proof of how effective this episode is and how visceral it feels in this moment. It really,
yeah.
Even though you know it's all pretend, like you're hooked, you're along for the ride.
Yeah. Like the cliffhanger at the end of the first part, I know what happens. I lived through it, but I watched that little, you know, to be continued. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, like I have to know what happens next. Yeah. I know what happens next, but it was a very compelling way to end the first part, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember when we, the season was done and we had a family and friends screening of the reunion episode. And I remember watching it and like, you know, being excited to see it all come together, but still watching it through the eyes of someone who was on the show and not really like so into the storyline. Cause like, I knew you're all my friends. But I remember the adults in the room, there were reactions coming out of them that none of the kids were having and now as an adult watching it, I can understand why, because they're watching you with this, like sitting next to this man. I mean, we haven't gotten to this part in the episode yet and we'll jumping ahead again, but like all that stuff, when he's setting up the camera and sitting next to you and everything like that, that made me feel
the camera
worked by Bruce for that. That perspective was incredible because that made me feel so dirty and just uncomfortable for you. Yeah.
That was so creepy. The shot of the camcorder and then you're seeing the footage through the lens of what this creep has set up. Oh, I was shuddering watching that back. It was so icky, so gross.
So meanwhile, back with Manny and the gang trying to hack into Emma's email, they're all trying to guess what your password could be. And they get that, the secret password hint, which is what's mom's favorite rock band. It's the Pogues, which I love. What a great little pop culture reference there. And they break in. They figure out where Emma's gone. They also figure out like his whole scam.
Yeah.
Like Toby puts it all together. He's like, he's actually hacked her email also. And he's basically just repeating the things that she likes, you know, her likes, her dreams, her wishes. Mm-hmm. He's just tapped in all of it and telling her exactly what he knows she wants to hear and what she likes, which is, again, it's like the writers, the producers, they're pulling the curtain back on like how these predators do this, right? And what they're, because this is a pretty, it's like a very elaborate plan. Like every detail, everything, it's so intentional and it's designed to like defeat all of her better judgment.
But it also makes so much sense, right? Like security features back in those days, like passwords were in their infancy. Yeah. Like, even the fact that Emma's password ended up being like the Pogues, that is 100 times more thought than most kids would have put into their passwords back then. So if you think about the reality of a situation like this, if an internet stalker or predator was trying to catfish someone and like get into their email, if they wanted to and seem like they're these kindred spirits when really they have all the information that they're going to be going by, that's it felt very, very true to form for me. Like I don't know much about real stories that like this and how like the events that led to the eventual meeting, but this seems so plausible in my mind of what someone would do.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
So at the high school reunion, Joey stands up for Caitlin and he calls Keith out to his face, which is incredible. Keith says, "Your bipolar jealous thing has gotten out of hand." Obviously, Joey doesn't like this. Keith doesn't like Joey. Keith actually assaults Joey by punching him in the face and a whole brawl breaks out, which is now we're watching Joey Jeremiah go for it, knocking over tables. And Caitlin confronts Keith, who basically doesn't reassure her at all when she starts asking him, you know, let's cut the BS. Are you for me? And do you want to even marry me? And he can't give her an answer, yeah. Which is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Stacy's question there was beautifully delivered. Caitlin, she's like, you don't want to marry me? Like, it was just the way she delivered it was so, like, gut-wrenching. Yeah, anyway.
I agree.
It's like, being an adult now, I'm really relating so hard to the adult storylines in the show. I don't know about you, Miriam, like, what you felt going, you know, watching it.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny to hear them referencing like their ages and stuff, because when we came into the show, I mean, obviously Spike was a teen mom, so of course she was going to be on the younger side. But when I came into the show, like Stefan, Amanda, Pat, they were all so old and so mature. And now looking back, they're younger than I am now. How does that happen? Like, oh my gosh.
Like 10 years younger than we are now.
Crazy. Like, yes. Like,
not just a couple. Yeah.
It's wild. I know. It's like, it's this weird time warp. Even sitting here chatting with you guys, there's a part of me that feels like no time has passed, even though so much time has passed. But for starters, you guys look the same. You guys haven't changed. And
you look exactly the same.
Exactly.
Like, literally, if we took this and we put us back in the old Epitome Studios, it would feel regular. I feel like we are so established in like this dynamic of like, you know, this family that we've created on the show. You could put us all back together and it would be like, you know, no time had passed at all. It's crazy.
Yeah.
If somebody came up to me, if an 80 walked up to us and said, "Oh, we're starting your scene right now," I think we'd all just be like, "Yeah, okay, cool." And walk there and get on our marks and then realize, you know, like the actor's nightmare, just realize like, "Oh my God, what do I say?
Right?
I don't know my lines. No. Sides. Sides?
Yeah.
100%.
I know.
But that's what happens when like we, not just us, but the cast, the crew, everybody involved. Like we literally created a world. Like we created an entire universe. And we would show up at that studio. It was like we were stepping into Degrassi. Like even if we knew it was a fictional place, we were still stepping into a realm that we had all co-created. And I mean, we could step right back into it. It's crazy.
It is a beautiful sentiment to think about it like that. It's like another realm that we all kind of have access to.
Right?
When you close your eyes, you get to go back there.
Yeah. And I feel it's this weird like distance from it. Like, because I have very much like, I've left the business. I don't acting and none of this is part of my daily life and it hasn't been for years now. So it does feel surreal. It feels a bit like an alter ego, like, for like me present day versus that. But yeah, it's crazy. And what's so nice chatting with you guys specifically is that you are part of that world. Like it's very easy to do an interview with someone who has only been an observer, but they haven't been immersed in the world and like, just kind of like understand like the daily grind of what it was to be on the show. So it's just so nice to be able to banter with you guys who lived it. So thanks for that, guys.
So basically, you don't want Andy to talk anymore in this episode. That's all I'm hearing.
No, not
Andy's
at all.
Talking way too
honestly,
much.
Honestly, I love hearing Andy's point of view because I love hearing a genuine viewer's point of view. Like it's I know you guys say maybe you can watch it back and become a fan or something like that. I don't know though. I just every single time I watch it. It's like, it's so hard for me to see the characters. It's so hard for me not to just like go back in time to that day on set and think about what I was thinking. And like, sure, I can see Spinner. Sure, I can see Jay. But I also see Shane and Mike. Like, it's very hard to just completely, you know.
Totally.
Differentiate. Having the perspective of a viewer, of a fan, of someone like that, it's so valuable. And like, it opens our eyes too to things we would never have even picked up on.
Okay, Andy, you can stay, I guess.
Thank God. I was about to stop the recording. Like, you guys are on your own.
All right, Mike, what else happens?
All right. So now here's the moment we've all been really talking about and that we want to chat about. And we'll get back to it. We'll get into it and take it a little further this time. Mr. Nystrom's story about Jordan and the boys, it's not making sense anymore to Emma at this point. And especially when she sees the camcorder, Emma begins to feel clearly very, very uncomfortable. So she tries to bail. She does that nifty little flip. But Mr. Nystrom blocks her exit. So she locks herself in the bathroom and she's in there wondering what the heck to do. At the same time, knowing where Emma is at this point, Manny and the whole crew are running to the reunion to tell the adults what's happened to Emma and that she's in trouble, which is very responsible. It's a very responsible. I was like, oh yes, okay, good kids. Like, that is exactly what you do. You run and tell a grown-up.
Isn't it funny though how they had to run because their mom and dad didn't have cell phones on them at the time?
Yeah. There was a moment though running out of the school after, like, the parents were going like, okay, kids, like, you know, someone, I can't understand you. The next we see is all of you, Snake and Spike running down the front steps. And I just want to draw attention to, like, I just love the line because she couldn't show her dialing 911. So it just had to go, hello, police? Yes, our daughter is in trouble. And, like, I love TV for moments like that.
Right. Yeah, don't see where she is. Nothing.
Our daughter's in trouble. This is the police, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Figure it out. Just double check.
Yeah.
The writers had to make sure we know it's TV, so they have to throw in one line that doesn't entirely make sense, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Of course. Not real life.
Yeah.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Caitlin, all of this happens just after Caitlin confides in Joey about the situation. And Caitlin kind of has this crisis of faith and she says, you know, I'm a fraud. I gave Emma relationship advice yesterday. And now I feel who am I to be giving this advice? Which is like
It was a beautiful moment, but it was also a beautiful tie-in because right after that, we go, you know what's going on with Emma at the hotel. So I, like, my life is a mess. Yeah. I gave Emma relationship advice yesterday, and now Emma's going through that. Like, yeah, Caitlin, she done messed up, you know? And she also said again to Joey, I'm almost 30. That's the third time she's made 30 sound like the end of the line, you know?
My wife and I looked at each other at that moment and she said the same thing. She said, again, again with this 30 business?
Yeah, I know.
I wonder if it's going to go all the way through the season.
That's like she works it into like once an episode.
But
she never turns 30 for some reason. So we're like,
yeah, like 10 seasons down the road. She's I'm nearly 30.
Yeah. Guys, I am almost 30. Haven't you heard?
Oh my God.
And everyone else is 40. Yeah.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Back to it. So the gang has told the adults where Emma is. Spike and Snake spring into action and they drive to the hotel in a very cool. Whose car was that? It's like a Jeep or some. Anyway, the point is, it's an incredible action sequence. And I had goosebumps, literally had goosebumps in those slow motion sequences where Snake and Spike were running down the hallway. I was actually kind of like freaking out.
Yeah.
It was intense.
Wait, those were shot was super effective too. Like the kind of like the effect that Bruce used in those scenes. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And when Jordan set up that camera, I know we touched on it before, but now we're actually here. When he set up that camera and he's trying to get the zoom right, which is so disgusting. And what he says to Emma was like, Yeah, so your mom's, you know, she's at the reunion. She's going to be tied up all night, and then we have hours.
Yeah.
Just like,
oh God.
Wow, that was dark, right?
Yeah, crazy.
I know we were talking about it a little bit, but how, like, a lot of that performance, I know you were feeling uncomfortable just like with the subject matter and what you, not uncomfortable as an actor, but like just the whole situation you were how old at that point? You were 12, 13?
13. I had just finished grade 8 when we started filming.
So, like, even having this man who I'm sure, like, you guys were on a closed set and he was very friendly to you and probably, like, was asking, like, is it okay if I touch you here? Is it okay if I touch you here? But, like, what was that like for you still, like, in a scene like that, sitting next to a man who looked like he was around 30, like, you know, getting that close to you, touching your face, doing a whispering to you, you know?
That whole scene was super creepy. Like, we were actually in a hotel room. We filmed on location. Most of our stuff, as you guys, I'm sure, have probably talked about, was at the studio, but this was in a real hotel. So it's all very authentic. You know, the dimensions of the room, it was tight quarters. We have the whole crew, who is mostly male, in the room. And yeah, I mean, it was super creepy. Like, I, at that age, and I was like, I was a very kind of like a sheltered kid in a sense. Like, I definitely never had someone whisper in my ear, or, you know, it was all uncharted territory. It was all supremely creepy. Of course, everyone was super professional and like everything was done to make it less creepy for me. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely some authentic, just like nerves and fear. But like I already kind of touched on, it wasn't until I was an adult that I could really grasp the magnitude of just how effed up that whole thing was. Yeah, I mean, because even as a kid, from your kid perspective, like, Emma wasn't wrong to meet someone on the internet. The guy was wrong times a million to go and try to meet Emma, right? So, I mean, she was clearly a victim. And yeah, the whole filming of it was very, very creepy and very weird. And a funny side note, actually, is the hotel we filmed at was actually, during the first season of the show, the hotel that I stayed at, because I was living in Oakville at the time, instead of commuting in. Yeah. So my mom and I would basically like stay at that hotel so that, you know, my 7 a.m. or 6 a.m. call times weren't so disastrously early. So it was actually where I spent most of the summer. Was that very
wow?
Right. So
nice. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it was all in all super creepy, but far creepier to watch back now and just literally be like quaking, thinking how unbelievably. I mean, it set the tone that the show was going to absolutely not hold back and be fearless, and especially at the time, like 2001, like, kids programming was far less advanced than it is today. And depicting something like that nowadays, like, would be a lot more commonplace. But back then, you know, this was all still a lot less exposed.
And this is a time before, I mean, now there's like intimacy coordinators. There's interesting that you bring up, you know, like the crews, a lot of them were very, very male, you know, so you don't have other women on set. I guess, like, you'd have Nancy there, yes. Maybe,
Nancy,
you know, and Linda.
Kai, who's doing hair, Jessica, yes. Makeup.
Jessica,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Like, Nancy was, like, one of the only, like, consistent crew members. Karen, props, she was there through
all. Karen, yeah.
But it was, I mean, I feel like most sets are very dominantly male.
Yeah.
All these days.
Mm. Yeah.
And so having just said that, I'm going off topic here, but is next September going to be 25 years since that episode happened?
We looked up, it was October 14th, 2001.
Yeah.
So okay. Yes, we are coming up to our 25th anniversary.
Oh, yeah. How is it possible, guys? We're 21 years old. That this can't be real.
It makes no sense. I just woke up.
My hairline like would this. Beg to differ, but inside this
right?
Head, yeah, it's, I can't, like, Mike and I, with what we get to do with all the conventions, like, it's not just that it's 25 years, which is nuts. It's 25 years and people still care as much as they did back then, which is, it's incredible. Mike and I, like, still have a hard time believing that. To, you know, the way that I look at, you know, Seinfeld or Friends or Breaking Bad, other people, that's Degrassi to them. And it's lived on in their minds and they are so excited to meet us at the conventions. We hear all these incredible stories. Yeah. So not just did we get to be on a hit show for almost a decade, but many shows just after they're done, they slowly disappear. But this one feels like people are going to care for the, you know, and until they're not on this earth anymore. It's very strange.
It really is incredible. And as I said, like, I've very much, like, removed myself from the world. I wasn't using social media, but in advance of like the TIFF premiere, which I guess at some point we can kind of talk about, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I don't want people wondering why have I dropped off. I don't want people worrying or speculating. So I just did create a post, which a lot of people commented on. And one comment that really stuck with me was like, I feel like an old friend from high school just posted. And I was so touched and I was so honored that people truly looked at us like friends, like peers. And that's amazing. Like, I think that that's why it was so meaningful to a lot of people, because, like, they thought we were their friends, and we were, like, we were there for them. And so
we were there for them.
I was just like, I was so, that was the most flattering thing someone could have said. I love that.
And there's a whole new generation too of fans. Like, it just, because the show is in syndication and it's always on some new streaming service. And I'm meeting, you know, parents who grew up with the Next Generation, and now their kids are watching it. Yep. I've seen even like almost like a third generation happen out of that. Like, older parents who came to it when they were, I don't want to date us entirely, guys, but, like, you know, there's like grandkids who are getting, starting, like, preteen grandkids. Like, I'm going to get them into Degrassi.
You dated us.
Sorry.
We're so old, it's impossible not to date us with everything we say.
There are great grandchildren who are now.
Yes. Yeah. No, but it's true. And when we do the appearances where Pat Mascherani is there too, like, you'll have parents and kids, but, like, they're adult kids now. But the parents are like, yeah, I'm here for him. She's all about you guys, though. And then every so often they'll have a little kid. Like, I'm just waiting until he gets a little bit older, and then he's going to be my new Degrassi buddy. And it's crazy that it's been around long enough. I mean, what, since the premiere of Kids of Degrassi Street, we're like getting close to 40 years now.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's a lot. It's a long time.
Not to date us.
To date us.
Young at heart, baby.
Mike, we're almost there. I believe Snake and Spike were running down the hallway.
That's right. Snake and Spike are running down the hallway in slow motion, and they beat the police, which, you know, had to happen.
Toronto's finest, of course.
Toronto's not slowest so police. And so they get there. Emma bites Jordan Nystrom, the bad guy, at this point, to escape. And Mr. Simpson ends up, like, physically restraining him before, you know, till the police get there. And that is sort of like the conclusion. That's the big action conclusion of the episode. So they save the day. It was intense. I was having a lot of feelings. And I knew that this was going to be a really tough conversation. Like, I was kind of waiting for the parent adult pep talk after this. Like, how, I guess, you know, I'm curious now, like, how is Spike going to handle this? Like, what's the tact here? What's the approach? Like, how do we prevent our kids from becoming victims like this? You don't want to shame them. You don't want to. So I was really curious how that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, too, there was this element of foreshadowing with Snake being the one to kind of come to save the day, because obviously in the coming season, Snake becomes Emma's stepdad. So it's very much like, it was like this foreshadowing of how this family unit comes together and how there's like this deep level of trust that's kind of already been like the seed has been planted right from the jump.
And he'll protect you.
Exactly. So it's almost like that was...
They had it planned out. Do you think they had it planned out?
I don't know.
All the way back then? Like maybe.
We've got to get some of the writers on the show to find these things
out.
Oh,
we will.
For sure.
We will for sure. Yeah.
We've got questions, but I've got questions for Yan Moore and Aaron Martin. Big time.
But that scene that that Spike and Emma did have right to button up the episode, and Mike, you could take us through it. But I just want to say right off the bat, like Miriam, your first line with just kind of like not even knowing what to say, but it was so innocent and it, like I'm sorry I ruined your reunion, Mom, and
heartbreaking.
It was just so heartbreaking too. Yeah, yeah,
that you were worried about her like ruining her night and.
Yeah.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
That was the audition scene, actually. That was like the one where I think I did screen test with Amanda. So that was, that was one of those audition scenes. And I totally agree. It's in that moment, like you just see the child in Emma, even though throughout the whole episode, she's kind of been trying to be older than she is. She's even told Jordan, I think she said she was maybe a couple years older than she really is. And then finally in that moment, you just see like the little girl that needed mommy's approval. And I agree. It was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Emma has an amazing line where she sort of challenges her mom. She says, "You never made a mistake before, like maybe having me."
Mm-hmm.
Which to me, that was like the line of the episode where I just went, "Oh wow, that's a tough one pill to swallow."
Yeah.
To me, the line of the episode came right after that, which was, when you were actually like both Spike and Emma were kind of yelling back and forth at each other, and Emma was like trying to restrain herself for a little bit, but then Spike was like, "You can talk to me about anything," and you yell back like, "No, I can't. You're my mom." Mm-hmm. And I thought that, like, maybe watching it as an adult, but I think that line right there encapsulates all of what Degrassi is.
Yeah.
Where it's like, kids who felt that they couldn't talk to their parents about things, whether their parents would have been welcoming to any topic of conversation or not, Degrassi was that parent to them or the friend that they needed at that time. So I thought there was so much power in that. And then Spike obviously came in with like, "No, like you could talk to me about anything and I want you to know that I'm your mom and I'll love you no matter what." But still that like, Emma just saying, "I can't talk to you. You're my mom. You won't get it.
You don't remember what it's like being 12.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
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 Very, very true. A really good point, Shane, too, about like, yeah, kids not thinking they can talk to their parents and Degrassi kind of being a parent figure. And I think it's true. Like at that age, kids don't quite see their parents necessarily as human because they still see them as a mom and a dad. And they probably haven't conceptualized that their parents have probably been through all this before and more. And it takes maturity to realize, oh, wait a second, like my parents, like they have their very own lives and their very own pasts and their very own experiences. But as a kid, it's just like, no, this is mom and dad and they expect this and this and this. So I think, I think all of those lines, I think that whole final scene, and I guess that's why it's called Mother and Child Reunion, maybe.
I guess
so. Plus that whole nod to like 80s songs throughout that whole first season. But I mean, I guess it was reuniting in a lot of things, like generations, parents and kids, friendships, past relationships. So yeah, Reunion was a very fitting title for that one.
Totally. And you do feel it in that line, you know, in those last few lines, you, for those of us who remember the original Degrassi, we're going in our heads, the audience is saying, "I remember what they were like when they were 12 because we watched that show," you know, like, so it's all of this is a nod back to that. And then the other aspect of this that I really, really liked was the final scene was that it does feel, it's not prescriptive Degrassi, but there is a point of view for sure. And when Spike says to Emma, you know, "No matter how much you hate my guts, what matters is that we just keep talking."
Mm-hmm.
Right. it's just that we keep those channels of conversation open because we can always fix it. And you're not always going to hate my guts. So, you know, like, it's not an instruction manual. It's not prescriptive, but it does seem to be like really pushing this sort of like being able to talk to your kids in order to protect them or figure out what's going on in their lives and to yeah, to be able to impart wisdom and keep them safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
No, I think overall, like for a series premiere two-parter that had so much responsibility, it kind of, you know, the weight bared on its shoulders for tying in two series to get a brand new audience interested and then honor all of the characters and all of the fans from the previous show while also introducing such a heavy, heavy topic right off the get-go with the central character. I thought it was, you know, just a 10 out of 10 for a series premiere. Yeah.
You a fan now, Shane?
I think I might be a fan, Mike. I'm a little nervous talking to Miriam. I just saw her on TV today.
Nice. 12-year-old yeah. me would be so proud.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's awesome.
You were a professional, Miriam. You did it and you killed it and you did a good job. And that's tell 12-year-old Miriam that.
I'll send her a memo.
Send her a memo.
Same with you guys. I mean, obviously, all of our three characters had a lot of really interesting storylines. And yeah, you guys have been such a pleasure from start to end. And now here we are, almost 25 years later, catching up.
Yeah.
Crazy. It ain't over. It ain't over. And the Degrassi documentary, in point of fact, is proof that people are still talking about the show. It's still very much out there. And I'm curious to know, you know, like I wasn't a part of the documentary. I know Shane was. You guys probably have NDAs. You can't speak about it, but I don't think
I signed an NDA.
I don't know what I signed, I don't know.
Sounds about right. We are actors.
We've been known to sign our lives away. So.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, all I can say with respect to that, I haven't seen it, have no idea what they've chosen to use. I may be in it for a blip of a moment, or maybe they have featured more of it. I don't know. I was very honest in that one because the thing that I realize in hindsight now that I'm as old as I am is I think a lot of the time, like on the show, I just really felt like the expectation was just to do a good job. And if a good job meant doing an interview and saying X, Y, and Z, then that is what I set out to do. So I really tried to be honest. I mean, I think that like there's a lot of instances where your honesty and your like admission to having experienced something, gone through something tough can be a real power moment for someone else out there that might be watching it, which also I think a lot of our episodes have done. So I will just say that I was a lot more like raw and open in that than I've been before, which is very scary. It's very scary to think about, but I'm very interested and excited to see what they've cut together. I'm sure there's going to be things I never knew, revelations. So exciting to see.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited to see this.
Yeah. And I think Miriam, because I took some time away from the industry as well. And I think like it's just one of those things, you get older, it puts that whole part of your life into perspective. You're able to kind of like, you know, connect the dots and see how things played out and how it, you know, has worked its way into your life now. Like if not for that, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. Like you wouldn't have done this, that. And I think it just makes you want to be honest about what these moments were like, and honest in a way that like, you might not have figured out back then because it was still too fresh, but now you've had so many years to think about it that you have a unique perspective on your own life. So you might've been telling like a version of the truth back then, and now you're telling a richer truth, if that makes any sense.
That makes so much sense. It's like in any situation, like it takes hindsight to be able to really reflect on what something was. When you're in it, you're immersed and you're not seeing it, and you're seeing it from an emotional standpoint and whatnot. And yeah, it does take that perspective. So I think that's very, very true. So it will be exciting to see though.
Yeah. I'm curious too. I have, it was like 2 years ago that I did the interview. I can't remember anything I said. Hopefully I just...
Wow, 2 years.
Yeah, like a year and a half. I know I did it in the winter time.
One of my dogs was going through a medical issue at the time. So I remember very, very well. It was a year and a half ago. It was like February.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have to come into the city? Were you living in the city at that point?
Yeah, so I went into... Where did we film it?
It was that like a sort of an abandoned school, I think it was. Yeah.
They shot in an abandoned school?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they just said, come out to an abandoned school. We promise. It's just an interview.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And what were you thinking? Like, what was the process? I don't want to ask you because I really don't want, I'm not interested in like stepping on anybody's toes or revealing information from the film or spoiling or anything. But like, what was the process? They reached out to you and kind of pitched it?
Yeah. So they reached out and pitched it. And I was on the fence about my participation because like I've said a couple times now, I've just really, really been enjoying not being a part of that world. As much as it was something I am so grateful for, I've also just loved building my world outside of that. So, you know, stepping back to that, I was a little bit hesitant about it. And then at the same time, like I said, my dog was... Oh, he was going through a lot. I haven't really talked about it, but he's doing well now. But he had brain cancer, which was really, really
oh my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he's doing better.
I'm glad he's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. And I'm such an animal person. It was very difficult. So I was on the fence about doing it, but then I decided that I do want a forum to speak a little bit more honestly about my experiences. Like you said, Shane, like this show seems to be ever present. Like it's not something that like, okay, well, 5 years have passed. People don't remember it. Like if it's going to be present, then I would like kind of an authentic interpretation of my experiences to be available, to be out there. And yeah. And like I said, like if anybody can learn from anyone else's hardship, then that just makes that hardship that you went through like so worthwhile. And if you can be like in any way a light for someone by sharing your tough times, then and what a win that is. So I was honest. I spoke about some things that were really hard for me. And like I said, I have no idea if they're going to make the cut. We know how editing works. Like who knows how things are going to come together, but yeah, I tried to share some honest stuff.
That's good. I mean, even if they don't make the cut, you sat and you opened up and you said like what you needed to say. Maybe there's, you know, maybe the act of doing that in and of itself is good and healthy and
freeing, you know, vindicating,
freeing,
whatever.
I don't know if you guys talked to Cassie Steele at all anymore, but I chatted with her on the phone. She's doing fantastic. And she did give me like this great pep talk because I told her a little bit about my anxiety, kind of about, you know, did I overshare? Did I say too much? Should I have said this? Uh-huh. And she was just like you, everybody just has to own their story. Like you have to own it. And she was just giving me this talk about resilience. And like, she was such an amazing motivator. And I don't know. I know she's wanting to live a private life now too, but she's doing fantastic. So that was a nice catch up. So.
She's great. She's got a baby.
Doesn't she have two? She has a second on the way, or she just had her set. Am I crazy?
As far as I know, I don't want to say anything she wouldn't want to be said. I know.
Right. Fair enough.
I know it's
enough,
public domain that she has a child. And yes, she is thriving. So, yeah, but I also know she's very much also valuing her privacy at this point. I think she's got a lot on her plate and she's doing a lot of things. And so she's picked the private path for now. So she's doing amazing.
Yeah. I spoke with her recently also and was very happy to speak with her and just to see where she's at right now. And, you know, without outing her, she's very happy and she's got, like her life is going and it seems like she's in a really good place. So that was nice to see.
That's one of the other reasons I'm excited about this podcast, because I know Mike and I have spent a lot of time together in the past. I go, what? Like, it hasn't even really been a year right? Like just coming up on a year since we did our first Comic-Con together. But we've been to a whole bunch of different places, and now like with pre-production for the podcast and now speaking daily on all the things that are going on. I know where you stand with your life. You know where I stand, but I'm so curious to know where like the other actors that we and cast members that we haven't spoken to in a while, where they sit with their lives now. Some of them are still in the industry. Some of them have moved to behind the camera, and some of them have departed completely and are, you know,
and are enjoying the challenge of, you know, redefining themselves outside of it. And just as long as everybody is, you know, charting their own course and happy with their decisions, I'm excited to hear all of their perspectives of what life post Degrassi is meant to them, right?
Totally.
Or amounted to, yeah.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy
Stop it! They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
So before we end things, let's just see what was going on in the world that was interesting back in October of 2001. Now, apparently, this episode came out on October 14th, 2001, and nothing interesting happened that day. So I'm just going to give you a little bit.
Hottest topic on that date?
We might have been. That would be awesome. But so I'll just give you some early October 2001 little you know highlights. American sitcom Scrubs, starring Zach Braff, premiered on NBC. That was one of my favorite shows for a period of time. On October 2nd, Cubs right fielder Sammy Sosa becomes first player in MLB history to total 60 home runs in 3 seasons.
Sammy, way to go, Sammy. 25 years later, way to go, bud.
There were a whole bunch of baseball records set. I guess it was October baseball, so right before the end of the season. That makes sense. UK talent show Pop Idol debuts, created by Simon Fuller with judges Simon Cowell, Pete Waterman. Start of the worldwide Idol franchise. So that was before American Idol. Pop Idol came out first, October 6th, 2001. That's pretty exciting. Simon's done quite well for himself.
We were competing with that.
Yeah, we were. And we won huge, obviously, in my mind.
We certainly did. I have a question for Miriam, actually, because I'm curious to know, you know, it's fun to go back and look at the date that this show aired and everything like that, you know, what was happening in the world. But like, do you remember what was happening in your world? Like, what were you listening to? What were you wearing? What were you, you know?
So, yeah, 2001 was my start of high school. I had just moved from Oakville to Toronto. I was very much invested in my dance studio. Like, if I wasn't on set, I was at dance. What was I listening to? So when did The OC come out?
God, I love The OC.
Andy?
I just remember in high school, I would always listen to The OC soundtrack.
Yes.
Whatever mix that was, I would just like listen to that on repeat. What else? Like
The OC was 2003.
Okay. So I guess prior to that, honestly, I feel like I was still in the phase of listening to like the Much Dance, whatever, like Much Dance 2.
Yes.
Or like super retro, like mix CDs. What was I wearing? I feel like that's like bell bottoms were a thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bell bottoms, which are back now, like the big pants are coming back.
All of this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Just recycle.
Miriam.
Yeah.
I remember like you back in those days had so much energy, like so much energy. I don't know where you stand now, but I remember distinctly on like every lunchtime. You would eat lunch, and then we would, if we didn't have scenes immediately following lunch, we'd have to be upstairs getting tutored, and you did not sit. You stood at your desk, and you were like
bouncing off the walls with energy, especially after you ate something. And I, it's such a fond childhood memory that I have of you. Like you did not need a chair. You were the only one that didn't need a chair.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That tutoring room though. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The tutoring room.
What it took to keep us in that tutoring room.
Felt bad for like every bouncers. Tutor. Even though they were great, they could not control us at all. No way.
Right.
No.
Yeah. I felt so bad for the TADs, the talent ADs, because they were always just like, oh my God, you have to go back into the please.
Oh, no. Yes.
Get into your wardrobe, go to the tutoring room.
Me and Cassie were just going to do our school in our dressing room, and we would like try to negotiate how like that would be reasonable. It's just can focus in there and like.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
No work was getting done.
Yeah. And they would always have to dress, like we would hang out in hair and makeup all the time. So we would, as soon as there was tutors weren't looking, a couple of us would like escape to the bathroom and then just go hang out in hair and makeup. They're like, guys, 4 more hours to bank. Come on. This is not like, this is ACTRA mandated. Like you got to do this or we get in shit. And like, okay, all right, fine. Yeah.
Or then we go down to craft and we just hang out in the craft area for like an hour. And that was cruel. We'd be done for the day and then we'd be like, okay, I'm ready to go home. No, you're not. You're going into the tutoring room for 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. You haven't done your mandatory 2. Yeah. What am I at? 45 minutes. Oh no.
Right. You've got a busy day tomorrow. You're going to get 0 tutoring in. So we're going to make you do 6 hours of tutoring today.
It's like detention.
Right.
Yeah.
But kudos to them. I mean, they made us do it. Somehow.
And just to let ACTRA know, you guys banked every single hour that you owed and didn't miss anything. Legitimately.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if they actually, like, if they found out this long after that we didn't and they came after us with some sort of like, so we were going through our archives over here and you owe us 72 hours.
You have to do 72 hours of high school work.
Course of your choice.
Turns out you didn't actually graduate.
Should we go to that mailbag? Should we see what
the let's hit the mailbag. We've got some questions.
I do want to ask a question that we asked last week, just to get this one right off the bat, because I'm curious what your answer is going to be, Miriam. This one was from Rachel A. Was there a scene that you just couldn't get through without breaking character that you can remember that was just hilarious and you were just driving the crew crazy?
So I can think of like two different episodes. So one of them was a scene with Danny Clark where we were supposed to be eating sushi. And this was a Bruce McDonald episode. It was one, maybe season two or season 3. And Bruce thought it'd be really funny if we put wasabi on Daniel's sushi unbeknownst to him. And I thought this was the funniest thing in the world because Danny would be like trying to deliver his lines, not knowing that we had absolutely like doused his sushi with wasabi and just watching his face. And I could not stop laughing. So that one comes to mind. And then there was another one in season maybe 6, episode 1, the Here Comes Your Man episode, where I had a line where I was supposed to say, that's a hit and run, right? And somehow the inflection that I put on it, I kept going, I don't even know what I did that was so funny. But Cassie and Stefan were just like coming at me like, no, why are you saying it like that? Why are you saying it like that? And I couldn't say it any differently. And then ultimately, like I could barely get out. It's a hit and run, right? I could barely get it out without dying of laughter because those two would be like offset, like convulsing. So those are the two that definitely come to mind.
I love that. So I have another question from my wife, because we've been watching this show together again. And she asked, did you keep the legendary dolphin pants from episode 1?
Yes. So not only did I keep the legendary dolphin pants, but they were actually my audition pants. So I had come across those.
Wow.
Yeah. At a boutique in Yorkville, actually in Toronto. And I was just like, these are super cool. And then I got the Emma audition and it said she's an environmentalist, and like being the little diligent, like studious girl that I was like, okay, she's an environmentalist. What would she wear? And she would wear dolphin pants. And so I wore those, and Linda Schuyler, once it was cast, was like, we need those dolphin pants. Where did you get them? So
that's amazing.
I definitely still have them and they're stretchy. Like I can still wear them. They're going anywhere.
You yes. got the part, kid, and bring the pants, the dolphin pants.
I love that. I, somehow I think that maybe the dolphin pants played a big part in you getting the role.
I kind of think they were maybe everything. They might have taken it.
I love that you still have them, though.
That's awesome. Great. I had no idea those were yours.
They were.
So I have one here from a Discord channel. This is the Degrassi Kid Discord channel. And Yukaria asked, how do you feel about the manga book that was made about Emma during that Degrassi manga series?
Yeah.
Or manga, however you guys pronounce it up there.
Manga. I've never known how to pronounce it. I thought they were super cute. I still have, like, I have this big, like, I recently moved and I've got this big box of, like, all kinds of artifacts, essentially, like a lot of it Degrassi stuff. And I have like 5 copies of the manga books. And I was flipping through it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so surreal and so cute. I think they're a very cool, like, memento.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were these mangas, was that the, like, the graphic novels, the extra credit books?
Yes.
Oh, I only know them as extra credit. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, you had one too for Spinner.
Yeah. Yeah, they gave me a square jawline like a superhero. I loved it.
Yeah, you do look pretty cool here.
Yeah, right?
For a while, there were like blankets and stuff in Walmart. My grandma, for the longest time, had a Degrassi blanket like on her couch.
Oh,
it was so cute. She would like, yeah, she had it on display. So sweet.
Were you on the limited edition craft dinner box?
I do not think I was. Were you on the Kraft dinner box?
No, because I guess we were with Norbert.
Norbert didn't want us on the Kraft dinner box.
No, why would you want to be on a Kraft dinner? That's like every kid's dream.
I know, but I think his logic that we had to go along with was, what if a competitor, you audition for a brand that's in direct competition with them and you can't take it for 10 years because of this contract. I don't think you're getting paid enough for this. Don't take it.
Right. Like, he was very rigid in his.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was a kid, I mean, I would just be thinking about, like, this is going to get me to Kraft dinner more frequently. I mean, my parents are going to have to let me eat all this Kraft dinner now, right, which is all I wanted to eat.
This is so bizarre hearing you guys call it Kraft dinner. And
what do you call it?
What do you call it?
And this is surprising to me that you guys didn't know this, because this is something that my wife, Natalia, and I joke about all the time. She used to say, do you want Kraft dinner? I'd be like, why are you calling Kraft macaroni and cheese Kraft dinner? It's literally just called macaroni and cheese here by Kraft.
No way.
What?
Yeah. It's not called Kraft dinner. And I was like, what's a Kraft dinner? She's like, macaroni and cheese. That's what they call it in Canada. And I was like, okay, sure. And then we were watching the show, and obviously it keeps coming up every once in a while.
I guess Kraft Canada was like, yeah, we want to corner the dinner market, so we're just going to call this dinner.
Americans are very on the nose. They need to know exactly what's in that box. And in Canada, we like the mystery.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, we just need to know it's edible.
There was another thing from the first half of the episode, or part one of the pilot, where you and... the kids were all on the playground. We talked about this. You guys had like squirt guns and you're eating these giant freeze pops that were like the size of your torso.
Yeah.
I've also never seen those. We have like what we call Otter Pops. I don't know if you guys have that brand there, but that's like the popular freeze pop. And the little mascot is like an otter. It's cute. But I had never seen like those giant freeze pops. Is that like a regular thing up there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We have them in the freezer right now. Very much a very real thing.
Canada is just like a fantasy land to me. I love it.
Come to Canada for our freeze pop.
Yeah. Yes. And ketchup chips and poutine and
stay for our Kraft dinner.
All the Kraft dinner you can eat.
All the Kraft dinner. But we're not going to tell you what's in it, Andy. You're going to have to find out for yourself.
Let me ask you one more question. And this was another one that we asked last week. This was from, I believe it was Michael. Nick. No, I don't know who it was. Who cares? Did you audition for any other characters other than Emma? And how was that audition process?
Yeah, so I did not audition for anyone other than Emma. So a little bit of Degrassi lore, I guess, is that I auditioned initially back in like September. And as far as my agent told me, I was nixed right out of the gate for that first audition. They said no. They said I had too squeaky of a voice, which worked well when I was doing animations, but that was the critique that I got. And my agent was then like, okay, you need to go to a dialect coach. You need to go to a voice coach. You need to work at like dropping into your diaphragm and basically change your voice if you want to keep auditioning. About 6 months later, there was a second round of auditions. So he acted as if I hadn't auditioned because they like apparently nixed me. And then I went back and I had worked with my coach and I had done all the things. And then after that, it was a pretty quick succession of audition. Then, I don't know, a couple months later, we started into the callbacks when I read with Cassie, I read with Sarah Bearable Tischauer, and we were doing like the sort of screen test thing, but I only ever read for Emma. So I'd actually love to ask like Linda and Steven if that's true, if I really was like blacklisted after my first audition and then I kind of like made a resurgence, or if that's just what my agent told me because he thought that would motivate me or something. But that was my process. In totality, it was like almost a year from the very first audition till I was cast.
That's amazing. So they were looking pretty hard, I guess.
Yeah. Well, with me, I think like my first audition was the monologue, and then my screen test was, I don't know, 2.5 months later. So it sounds like there was a whole round of auditions like 6 months before my first audition that I was not even a part of.
Do you remember what month your first audition would have been?
I remember that my first audition is very easy. It was on Easter Monday.
Oh.
That
was when I was into my second round. So that first round must have been just some cattle call situation or something.
Yeah. So that lines up because I remember like I think my screen test was in May. And I had forgotten all about it because who doesn't hear back about an audition for months? Like it's done. It's over.
Before we wrap this thing up, Miriam, we just wanted to ask, is there anything that you wanted to advertise, plug, let us know about, anything at all?
No, I am like, I'm not plugging or advertising anything these days. I think the only thing I want to say is a huge thank you to you guys for creating this and for having a forum like to reconnect not only our cast, but with our fans and like what you guys are doing with the outreach to the legions of fans that are still out there, still looking for a connection to the show. Thank you guys for doing that, for keeping this flame alive. And again, just an eternal thank you to everybody that is listening to this and that has supported us for all these years, coming up to 25 years now.
Of course. Well, we'd love to have you on again. So keep in touch.
Really. No, you guys, it's been such a pleasure. And I've loved catching up with you. And I can't wait to see where you guys take this and hear all the secrets from everybody else that I didn't know about.
Well, I mean, as I said at the beginning, we were just so excited because this podcast is in its infancy. And obviously, we have the highest of hopes for it. But just knowing that you were gracious enough to sign on when you didn't even have anything to go like, let me at least listen to one first to see what I'm getting myself into. And so we were excited that you said yes, but I mean, this went like even better than I could have hoped it would. It seemed like you had a good time, but even if you didn't, I had a good enough time for both of us.
No, so. You know, this has been a joy. It has been a pleasure. Seeing you guys is so amazing. And I've loved chatting with you.
Awesome. Thank you, Miriam.
That brings us to the end of another DGrads podcast. This is so much fun. Mike, give them the information, please.
Yeah, thanks guys so much for listening. If you've got questions, thoughts, or just want to share your Degrassi memories, please feel free to hit us up at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode.
Yeah, and those subscriptions mean a lot. And the reviews, those also will really help the podcast get out to more people, more Degrassi fans, so we could share the wealth and keep this thing going for as long as possible. But once again, thank you so much for listening. I am Shane Kipple, along with the gorgeous Mike LaBelle.
Ah, stop.
I wish you could see him right now. And we will talk to you next week, guys. Thank you very much.
Moto Casino, America. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.